Parsha Vayigash begins with Yehuda pleading on behalf of Binyamin, whose responsibility he took upon himself, how he explains he cannot go back to his father without Binyamin with him. And this pleading has the desired effect. Yosef breaks down, is no longer able to hold back his identity, reveals himself to his brothers, and the Parsha discusses how Yosef extends the invitation to his fathers and to his brothers to move to Eretz Goshen. The entire family is delineated in the Parsha, and how they are set up in Eretz Goshen, with Yehuda setting up a yeshiva first, he sent ahead of the rest of the group, and how they live in Eretz Goshen. Within this drama of the Parsha, I'd like to speak about today an idea which is really not related to the Parsha per se, but related more to two key individuals in the Parsha. I'd like to try to understand them more on a level of what they represent, the prototypes, what we can learn from their personalities with the lessons clearly for our lives, and that this meeting of the two brothers of Yehuda and Yosef is not just the meeting of Yehuda and Yosef, but is much deeper than that. And as we've spoken about in the past, every story in the Chumash, although has to be understood on the literal level, also has many levels of allegory, many levels of understanding that we need to attune ourselves to, because this is the beauty of learning. The parasha begins off, Vayigash Elav Yehuda. Then Judah approached him and said, "If you please, my lord, be Adoni, may your servant speak a word in my lord's ears, and let not your anger flare up at your servant, for you are like Paro." On this, there are two very fascinating midrashim. And it's these midrashim that I'd like to focus in today. There's a midrash in Bereishit Rabbah that explains this pasuk as saying, connecting into the pasuk in Tehillim, "Ki hineh hamlachim no'adu avru yachdav." Behold, these are the kings that are meeting. Who are these kings? These are the Yehuda v'Yosef. The kings that are meeting. The meeting of Yehuda and Yosef here are not just two brothers or two personalities. It's rather two prototypes of malchus, of kingship, that are meeting here. One represented by Yehuda and one represented by Yosef. And the Medrash continues and it says, we know that the first verse in the Haftarah in Yechezkel says, "The word of Hashem came to me saying, now you, son of man, take yourself one wooden tablet and write upon it for Judah and the children of Israel, his comrades, and take another wooden tablet and write upon it for Yosef, the wooden tablet of Ephraim, and all the children of Israel, his comrades. And bring close to yourself one to the other like a single wooden tablet, and they shall become one in your hand." The meeting of Yehuda and Yosef is a meeting which is really an event happening now that is foretelling a future event where once again the Yehuda and Yosef will come together, v'hayu la'achadim b'yatecha, and they will be one in your hand. This unity of Yehuda and Yosef, this aspect of oneness, has to be examined. What is it about the kingship of Yehuda? What is it about the kingship of Yosef? And what is this concept that they are going to become one in the future? That's question one we need to investigate. The second aspect we need to investigate is a very fascinating medrash. It's a beautiful verse in Amos that says, the 9th chapter, "Behold, days are coming, the words of Hashem, when the plower will encounter the reaper, and he who treads upon the grapes will meet the one who brings the seeds, and the mountains will drip with wine, and the hills will melt with fat." The normal understanding of this pasuk that the commentators note is there's going to be so much food in the future time, the imagery of the mountains dripping with wine and the hills melting with fat, that the reaper and the plower will meet together. That the one who's going to reap is going to have so much to reap that it's going to go over into the plowing season, and there's going to be a meeting between the reaper and the plower, which is a symbolism of the abundance of food. The Medrash understands this slightly differently. Says the Medrash, "Choresh ze Yehuda." The plower is a reference to Yehuda. The kotzer, the reaper, is a reference to Yosef. Cite the pasuk of the dream of Yosef that he's binding in the sheaves. That's the concept of the reaper. The Derech Anavim, also according to a verse, is a reference to Yehuda, and the Moshe Chazera, the one who brings the seeds, is a reference to Yosef. So here we have the pasuk that's finding four different farming jobs and ascribing two to Yehuda, two to Yosef. We also have to understand what is the imagery trying to be conveyed here. On the simple level, you have the word Vayigash Elav Yehuda, and Yehuda came close. And in this verse you have Vinigash Choresh Bekotzer, and the harvester and the plower and the reaper will come close one to another. So you have one place Vayigash, one place Nigash, so it's connected. But it has to be much deeper than that. What is the symbolism of Yehuda being the plower, that Yosef being the reaper, Yehuda being the one who treads on the grapes, and Yosef is the one who's bringing in the seeds? What is this medrash trying to teach us? So what I'd like to try to do is just to understand, albeit briefly, but on some level, what are the personalities in Yosef and Yehuda all about? What is the symbolism of the Malchus? And what does it mean that in the future there will be one, clearly using the imagery of the future times of Amos, of the plower and the reaper as well? In order to understand the difference between Yehuda and Yosef, we need to understand a fundamental aspect within Torah itself, within mitzvot itself. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, in his book Logic of the Heart, Logic of the Mind, speaks about that there's a wisdom of the heart just as there's a wisdom of the mind. And he quotes a medrash in the Yalkut Shimoni on Iov between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. Where do we find wisdom? According to Rabbi Eliezer, wisdom is found in the heart of man, while according to Rabbi Yoshua, it is found in the mind of man. And the Elu Be'elu Divrei Elokim Chaim, these and these both are words of the living God. What's very fascinating, just parenthetically, is that B'nai Sefcha points out that when Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua have an argument, you will always note, or usually you will note, a consistent pattern between the two. And it's really based on their names. Rabbi Yoshua comes from the word Lahoshia, to save. And Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Elazar, comes from the word also Ezra, to save as well. What's the difference between an Ozer and a Moshiach? We say this, Melech, Ozer, Moshiach, Umagain. What's the difference? So he explains that a Yeshua is when a person screams out and someone saves them, that's a Yeshua. Ezra is when a person doesn't scream out and you take the initiative and you save the person. And that's why Rabbi Yoshua is going to be the one which has articulation, while Rabbi Eliezer is going to be the one that's going to be more of the silent one. That's how it explains, for example, the difference between when was the world created, in Tishrei or in Nisan. So it seems from the Gemara that in Tishrei, Allah b'machshava, it came to the mindset of God, kivyachol, and in Nisan it was created. Once again, Rabbi Eliezer is the one who said the world was created in Tishrei, and Rabbi Yoshua said the world was created in Nisan. This same distinction is found here. Rabbi Eliezer is the heart of man, or Rabbi Yoshua is the mind of man. And continues Rav Aaron by saying that the Torah itself has mitzvot based on the logic of the mind, and there are mitzvot that are based on the logic of the heart. And the Rashba points out in one of his tshuvas that these really are reflected in the two aspects of the tefillin. You have the tefillin shel rosh, and you have the tefillin shel yad. And he goes on to explain so beautifully that we know the pasuk says that it shall be a sign, an oath, upon your arm, and for frontlets, a totafot between your eyes. And totafot is a very difficult word, and Rashi quotes from Menachem Ibn Saruk, saying that totafot is derived from the word to speak. So it has the significance of speaking, and corresponds to luzikaron, for reminder. For whoever sees the tefillin bound between the eyes will remember the miracle and speak about it. This tefillin shel rosh is a distinguishing feature of speech. It corresponds to the obligation that are based upon the logic of the mind, where this logic can be perceived through observation, through deductive and inductive reasoning. It expresses idea in a way that anyone can understand. It's the power of speech. It's again the aspect of Rabbi Yoshua. But the tefillin shel yad, though, represents the commandments based upon the logic of the heart. And such logic contains an unwritten dimension that is double the written dimension. It cannot be seen so easily. It must be perceived intuitively. It's the Rebbe Eliezer. It's the aspect of silence. It's the aspect of being able to intuit a lot of the mitzvot based on the heart and not based on the mind. And you have many mitzvot that are very much mind, speech-oriented, and likewise many mitzvot that are much more heart and inner mitzvot as well. And he says that this distinction is also to be found within the way the Torah itself is written. He says it's a very fascinating distinction. He says you have some passages in the Torah that are the divine prose, the non-shira part of the Torah. And those are written normally, one word after the other word. And then you have a shira section of the Torah, the divine poetry, as Az Yashir or as Hazinu. And there we know the halacha is that it's written in a peculiar way, in the form of half a brick set upon a whole brick. As Rashi explains, the half brick represents the written part of the lines of the shira, and the whole brick represents the blank part of the lines. That means that the divine poetry of the Torah must be written in space in such a way that the unwritten portions of the lines are double the written part. Divine prose, however, must be written so one word follows another. And if one opens up to any Chumash, let's say the Arsko Stone Chumash, you'll see very clearly that in Az Yashir and Hazinu, the format of the writing is different with a lot more empty spaces. What does this mean? So he says, once again, it's this distinction. The divine prose is perceived in accordance with the logic of the mind through observation, deductive, and inductive reasoning, while the divine poetry of the Torah ever stems from the logic of the heart, which contains more unwritten space than written space. A great deal of the logic of the heart, the shira in the Torah, cannot be seen by the human eye. It can only be perceived intuitively by the hearts of those Jews who want to perceive. And this is a major distinction in all aspects of approaching, whether the Torah, the shira aspects, the Tilun Shalyah, the Tilun Sharosh, or a whole approach to Torah mitzvot, is the balance between the Shalyad and the Sharosh, the logic of the heart and the logic of the mind. These two aspects are really found within Yehuda and Yosef. Once again, the Sefer Mimamakim, based on the teachings of Moshe Shapiro, the teachers in Eretz Yisrael today, a very deep philosophical approach to Torah, he notes that the Maharal explains the point of difference between Yosef and Yehuda and Netzach Yisrael in the 37th chapter. And he says that all of Jewish people are compared to different limbs. But there are two aspects of a person that are milachim al kol haverim, that are really the kings over all the other parts. And they are clearly the head and the heart. Yehuda is compared to the head, while Yosef is compared to the heart. Yosef is always in the center, like the city of Shechem, which is so connected to Yosef, is in the center of the land. He goes on to explain that the heart is usually the shorash harishon, the impetus that begins any process. This is referred to as the bekoach, that which exists in potential. And then you have the actualization, the bepoal, of that which you desire to do, and that is in the world of the maisa, that's in the world of the actual, and that represents Yehuda, that represents the mind, that represents taking that impetus of the heart and being able to extend it outward. And this is why we find there's a Malchus Yosef and a Malchus Yehuda, a kingship in life of Yosef and a kingship of Yehuda. Because in actuality, the kings are really the structure to allow a person to refine themselves into these two areas. If people were on a level of being able to take their inner desires, the bekoach, the heart, and serve God with them, and they were able to take their mind, the bepoal, the action, and serve God with them, if they were on that level, there'd be no need for kings. But since the people are not on that level, so you have the kingdom of Yosef, which is bring the people's heart toward God, and you have the kingdom of Yehuda, which is to bring the people in terms of practice in a relationship with God. And the Ma'akim continues, it's not by accident that each one of these individuals, Yosef and Yehuda, got the qualities that they did. Yosef, the quality of the heart, is really the quality that he got from his mother, Rachel, we know was the person Shetafsa Mepelech Shtika, who had the ability to be silent, to be able to hold things in, which Yosef developed as the internal part of self, the Bechinat Haleid, the aspect of the heart. While Yehuda, who is the aspect of the mind, the aspect of speech, as we saw, is the son of Leah, who was Tafsa Bepelech Hodaya, who is able to express her gratitude through speech to God for having given birth to Yehuda, the external aspect that Yehuda gleaned. Rav Soloveitchik in Yemei Karon takes the difference between Leah and Rachel even one step further, which further just demonstrates the distinction between Yehuda and Yosef. He explains in Yemei Karon that there are certain people who are very dynamic, who are very forceful, who are able to take on a challenge and be able to tackle any challenge in front of them. And that is really Leah Imenu. As we see in the conversation between Leah and Rachel over the Dudaim, over the mandrakes, that she says to her, Ama'at kachtech et ishti, v'lakach gamet Dudai b'ni. Not enough you take my husband, you're also going to take the Dudaim? This is a person who speaks with a tremendous amount of hakara atzmit, a tremendous amount of self, a tremendous feeling of authority, of forcefulness in her whole presentation. This is Leah who goes out. She goes out that night to the field and says to Yaakov, to me you're going to come tonight. I'm the one who acquired you tonight. This is a woman who said, I am going to David and do whatever I have in my powers to not to land up to marry Esav. Someone who is not at all passive, who takes a very active role. That's the aspect of Yehuda. The aspect of the mind, the aspect of the world of action, the world of being able to put the mindset into actuality. Rachel, on the other hand, is a different typology completely. And that, he says, Rachel, we know, means a little lamb. It's based on the pasuk in Yeshaya, the Kirachel lifnei gozazeha nelma, and Rachel's in front of those who shear her in her silence. And he describes it so beautifully. It's like this little lamb that carries on this wool and grows with her and warms her up, and suddenly they take off that wool, they shear it with strength, and she's left with nothing, and her whole body is trembling, but yet she remains quiet. That's Rachel. It's the Rachel who has the ability to give up her husband by giving these signs who she longed for, and being able to accept her fate with silence, without complaint. Now, this is the Rachel who has the ability to hold back her feelings, who doesn't express her feelings. This is the aspect of the heart, the aspect of self-control, and this is the aspect that Yosef got from his mother, and this is the area that he excels in. And it's interesting, in looking at the descendants, looking at the malchus, the kingship, from Yosef and from Yehuda, we notice how these distinctions play itself out. The first king of Israel was not from Yehuda. It was from Binyamin, who's a descendant of Rachel, who's Shaul HaMelech. We know that his job was really to bring the people's heart, like Yosef, the descendant of Rachel, to bring the people's heart to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And had he been successful, so there really would have been a dual kingship. There would have been a kingdom of Yehuda and a kingdom of the Bnei Rachel, and they would have worked hand in hand together. But the Gemara tells us, Shaul b'achad v'altalo, David b'shtayim v'lo altalo. Shaul sinned one sin, and that was it. He lost the kingship, while David sinned twice, but didn't lose the kingship. And the normal explanation of how this is so, it seems so unfair, is that David HaMelech readily admitted, Chatati l'Hashem, when he had sinned, while Shaul does not readily admit it, blames it on many external circumstances. Now, Makim explains it on a little bit of a different level, on a very deep level. What was the sin of Shaul? The sin of Shaul was that he didn't destroy all of the cattle of Amalek and kept Agag, the king, alive as well. And what was Shaul's excuse to Shmuel? Ki yareti et ha'am v'eshma b'kolam. I fear the people, I listen to their voice. Shaul, who had to take his heart and be able to channel the people's heart to the service of God, Here we find Shaul's heart is influenced by the people. Shaul is swayed by the people. If Shaul HaMelech, in the very area which he is supposed to try to elevate, in that very area is his falling, he lost it. Well, David HaMelech, although he sinned, he didn't sin in the intrinsic areas of the Malchus, of the Rosh, of the logic. He sinned in the aspects of the heart. So since Shaul sinned in the very area that he was supposed to excel in, therefore he lost the Malchus. Well, David HaMelech did not sin in those very areas that he was to excel in. This was the difference between David and Shaul. We also see, as a second example, that after the split of the kingdom, we mentioned this quite recently, you have the two tribes and 10 tribes after Shlomo HaMelech's death, and you have Rehoboam, the king of the two tribes, the son grandson of David, Shlomo's son, and then you have from the Malchus Yisrael, you have somebody from Ephraim, the descendants of Yosef, Yerovam. And Yerovam, once again, could have had the opportunity to elevate the people to God and really could have worked hand in hand with the kingship of Yehuda. But what does the Torah tell us? The Torah tells us that he made a holiday, Bechodesh Asher Badam Milibo, in the month that he created from his heart. And here again we find his failing. If you're going to create a month from your heart, Milibo, so then you're using your heart in the wrong direction. If you're going to use the heart in the wrong direction, so you're leading the people away from God, and you're not going to be successful. This is the major distinction between Yehuda and Yosef. Yehuda is the mind, Yehuda is speech, and Yosef is the heart. Yosef is the ability to be able to channel those feelings toward the service of God. It's the inner expression of devotion, while Yehuda represents the outer expression of devotion. This difference between inner and outer is also borne out in the way Chazal see, our rabbis see, two aspects of bris, of covenant, in the body, one a reference to Yehuda and one a reference to Yosef. We know Rabbi Tatz in World's Mass points out that there's the bris hama'or, this is circumcision, and then there's the bris haloshon, the covenant of the tongue. Both are creative, both are energies of connection, both must be used carefully and loyally. And really the function of speech parallels the function of reproduction. In the lower worlds of the body, the output is offspring, the physical being of a child. In the higher worlds of the head, the output is words. Just as children are an outward expression of the body of the parents, so too words are an outer expression of the mind of the speaker. The Sfasemis explains that Yosef is connected to the Brit HaMaor, the Brit of circumcision, and Yehuda is connected to the Brit HaLoshon, the aspect of the speech. It continues the Sfasemis, and this is what Chazal mean by saying that Yosef kidei shem shemayim b'seter v'Yehuda b'farhesia. That Yosef and Yehuda were both tested. Yosef was able to withstand the test with Mrs. Potiphar. He did not succumb. He had the ability to hold on and the ability to withstand any temptations. But he did this quietly. There was no one around, just him and Mrs. Potiphar. The house was empty. That's the aspect of the Brit HaMaor, the circumcision. That's the aspect of Yosef being the heart. Yosef represents the private area. While Yehuda did succumb to the relationship with Tamar, but was able to verbalize and say, Satkami many, she's more righteous than me, and he was able to do that before Hesia in public. And that's the Brit of the Lashon, the covenant of the tongue, which is the external manifestation. So once again, we see this internal, the external, the Bekoach and the Bepoal, the ability in the potential, the ability in the actual reflect both Yosef as well as Yehuda. Which leads us to probably the major distinction between Yosef and Yehuda that Chazal bring, is that there are two aspects of types of people in this world. There's the chassid hameule. There are some people who are born with just a natural tendency for devotion, for religiosity, for goodness, for connection. And these are people who are rarely tempted. They're just not affected by the world and temptations around them. And they're able to overcome anything that comes in their ways and just are completely connected to God. And that's Yosef. Yosef is the chassin me'ulah. He's the individual who doesn't fall. He never sins and then has to get himself out of it. He's someone who's blessed by birth with natural tendencies and inclination for spirituality, for spiritual growth. And then there are other people who are the Moshe Benasho, who constantly have to struggle, who they have to give stucca, not because it's a natural inclination to give stucca, but they struggle. I know I should give it, and it's hard to give it, but I have to give it. And this is Yehuda. Yehuda, who's the one who had problems with the sale of Yosef. Yehuda was the one who had relations with Tamar, and then has to say, Tzad kami meni, she's more righteous than me. Yehuda is the person who constantly falls and then rises. This is the aspect of being able to admit. This is the aspect of the Yehuda, the Hoda, the admittance, the Brit HaLashon, the covenant with the speech. This is the world of Yehuda vis-a-vis the world of Yosef. This is the major difference between the two. It's interesting to note that the Jewish people are at times called by the name of Yosef, like Nahag Katzon Yosef, and at times they're referred to as a Yehudi. For example, throughout Megillas Esther, they're called, right, Ish Yehudi, Mordechai HaYehudi, and Zechariah, there's a reference to Yehudi. And it's interesting, Mimamakim notes that Yosef was really an earlier name that was given to the Jews. When the Jews were on a level of tzaddik mikara, when they were really connected to God, and they felt this connection to God, so then they were on the level to be called a Yosef. But once the Churban happened, once the destruction happened, and the Jews are thrown out of their land, so then they have to work much harder of the falling and then the rising again. This aspect is the aspect of the Yehuda. That's the aspect that Yehuda has found, Yehudi, in much later books in the Tanakh, in the books relating to after the Churban, after destruction of the First Temple. It's the model of the Nahafochu Asher Yishlatu HaYehudim Hema B'Soneihem. The overturning, where now the Jews are going to Jews will rule their enemies. But that overturning, that being able to fall, and now the Nahafochu, is really what the Yehudi, is really what the Jew is all about. It's interesting, according to this, we can now explain the famous medrash of why Rachel Imenu is the one of all the Avos and Imahos to jump up at the time of the Churban and cry to God and say about her children, Ki'enenu, they're no longer here, and God having to promise that they will return. Because it was Rachel who's crying over the fact that the Jewish people have lost this aspect, this gift that she's given to them, this gift of the having the tzaddik mikara, the gift of the lev, the gift of the heart, the gift of the emotional connection to God, the gift of being called Yosef. At this point, when the people lose this aspect of Yosef, it's Rachel who feels it the most. Ki einenu, they've lost that beautiful aspect of connection, relationship to God. It's she who is crying. And this is why God promises her in the future, they're going to return. The Shavu Banim Legvulam, they're going to return to their borders. It's not just a physical return, it's a spiritual return as well, with the Malchus of Yosef. The Mashiach ben Yosef will also return as well. And therefore, Mimamakim summarizes what we've seen, I think, in a very beautiful analysis. He says there are really three aspects to the Malchus of Yehuda and Yosef. One is the way the Malchus Yehuda stands by itself, one is the way the Malchus of Yosef stands by itself, and one of them is in the future how they will be joined together. And he says very beautifully that these aspects of the kingdom of Yehuda and Yosef really parallel and come to almost form a completion of the book of Reishit. Yehuda becomes the foil, the antidote to a certain degree of Edom. Edom, Esav, represents the aspect of Gaiva, the aspect of pride. Yehuda being able to admit, being able to say, I was wrong, is the ability to counter this Gaiva, to counter this aspect of haughtiness with anivus, with modesty. Yosef, the aspect of the heart, the aspect of being able to hold himself back from immoral acts, is clearly the counterproduct to Yishmael, who is one whose whole life is based on taiva, is based on desire. And it's going to be the Yosef who's going to be the parallel of saying how you can take those desires, you can overcome them, and take that emotional connection and closeness to God. And clearly the combination of Yehuda and Yosef together will be able to fight the Esav and Yishmael combination in the future together as well. But it's interesting to note that these aspects of pride and of desire that Yehuda and Yosef represent is really the balance of what the whole theme of Bereishit is about. Whether it's a sin of Adam vis-a-vis the sin of Cain and Hevel, whether it's a sin of the Chet HaMal, of these aspects of the theme of Sefer Bereishit running through the theme is being led astray by either pride or by desires. And Yehuda and Yosef coming together, Vayigash Elav Yehuda, Yehuda coming together and meeting Yosef, which is really just a glimpse into the future, is really the balance of the Jewish response to all of these difficult problems as they are refined in the personalities of Yehuda and Yosef. I think what we need to deal with now very briefly is we who are called Yehuda, we are all called Yehudim, we are all called Jews. And most of us are not at Tzadik Mikara, we are not ones who are not tempted, we are not ones who have this immediate emotional connection to God. How do we relate? What inspiration do we take from Yehuda for our own lives? What are messages that Yehuda can represent as models for our Avodas Hashem, our service of God? And I think perhaps very briefly, we can enumerate two such models, two such messages. The first is in what the name Yehuda represents and what Yehuda as the individual represented, as we've seen. Rabbi Kurser in The Art of Jewish Prayer notes that the Hebrew word for thanksgiving is hoda'ah. This word also means to admit or to acknowledge. Rav Frutner Zatzal said that every expression of thanks that one person gives to another is really a form of admitting. People sometimes have difficulty saying thank you to another person because it implies that the first person needed the second. And that's why in the Mozim prayer we admit we need God and that we appreciate everything He gives us. And that's why Yehuda originally got his name as Yehuda, to give thanks, but it was also an admittance. When Leah had Judah, she recognized she had been granted more sons than was her portion. Upon the birth of her fourth son, she admitted to God she had been given something that was beyond her fair share. And that's why in the Mozim prayer we say that God is the source of all goodness, and that is why we have received from Him. We are not so arrogant as to say that we have received because we deserve to receive. The Mozim prayer, what Yehuda represents, is the ability to give thanks, but giving thanks means to admit, and the admittance is really that everything comes from God, that all that we have belongs to God. And it's not the concept of the gaiva, the concept of the arrogance of self, but the ability to admit that we are dependent on God. The ability of Al-Pial Derech HaSecha, on the intellect, in the world of action, that Yehuda represents, the name Yehuda represents, that we have the ability to admit that we need God in all the worlds of action and everything that we do, that we cannot do it by ourselves. And that's why it's very appropriate that in the Mozim prayer, where we make this statement every day, how everything we have comes from God, and we should not think we are doing this all by ourselves, that we bow at the beginning and at the end of this bracha. And he explains so beautifully, the concept of thanking God and bowing to Him is related to distinguishing between what is right and what is wrong. Adam introduced the negative force into himself because he wanted to be like God. His arrogance made him not want to accept that God's command was for his ultimate benefit. He therefore created a perception of reality in which good and bad became mixed. God told Adam to listen to Him, whereas Adam stood up to God and decided to listen to himself. And when we bow, we show that we subjugate our will to God and acknowledge His will as being supreme. We demonstrate that God is ultimate wisdom and goodness, and that He's the ultimate director of our lives. Every time we bow, we break our resistance to allowing ourselves to be dominated by God's will. We demonstrate physically that we want to break our stiff-necked approach that denies that what God commands is good for us. And that's what the bowing is about. When we bow, we should focus on breaking our stubbornness and unwillingness to listen to God, who is the one who knows what is ultimately good for us. And then we stand up straight and being able then to face God as recognizing that everything we have comes from God. This is the model of Yehuda being the Choresh, being the one who plants in the ground. Yehuda is the one who realizes that in everything that we do, in all our endeavors of planting, in all our endeavors of trying to be successful in this world, when we're in the process formation, it's sometimes clear when things are finished. But as the Sfasemes points out, Gam v'toch ha-hester, even in times of darkness, when we're involved in a project, to say that this comes from God. This is the model of Yehuda being the plower. It's clear from Yosef that when the product comes out, Yosef is the one who clearly knows that this comes from God. Yosef is one who's completely connected to God. He's the Nekudah Pnimit, that inner spark. It's the Yehuda who has to go through the process in the working, recognizing and admitting that everything belongs to God. That's how the Sfasemes explains in his first piece on Parshas Vayigash. He says so beautifully, Vayigash elav Yehuda, and Yehuda came close. Milashon hoda'ah, Yehuda is from the aspect of admittance. And this is found, according his father, that the Jews are called Yehudim because they are able to give thanks and to admit to God on every single thing that happens, shakol mimenu yitbarach, that everything comes from God. And with this, then, yicholim ligash, then they can come forward. And this is the key for any Jew, that anything that you do in life, vayigash elav Yehuda, Yehuda comes close, elav with a capital Aleph, that Yehuda comes close to him, to God, and recognizes that all that we have comes from God. That's how he explains on a deeper level. When Yehuda makes this statement, that I recognize that everything, shegam b'toch haser, even in darkness, yesh chayut meratzon Hashem yibarach, there is this aspect of godliness and the godly will. And Yehuda is able to come forward to God with this recognition. So then in a real sense, he's coming forward to Yosef as well. Because Yosef represents this inner spark. And when Yosef realizes how Yehuda has been able to identify this aspect, so Yosef is no longer able to hold himself back, and he reveals that inner part of him and says, I am Yosef. When Yehuda is able to break through the darkness and say that I believe al pi derech seichel, logically, that everything comes from God, so then Yosef and Yehuda can come together and they can become one with this recognition that we are totally dependent on God. I think this is the first level. The model of Yehuda, the model of the mind, the model of admitting, is the model of saying so clearly that whatever we do in life, we always have to say, Emir Tashem, Baruch Hashem, Bezrat Hashem, always ascribe it to God. Always recognize that everything we have belongs to God. The aspect of bowing by Modim, of breaking that resistance, of seeing in the Choresh, in the plowing, when you're working on that land, that everything that we do, whether we see it or not, has to be with the help of God and not from ourselves. That's the model of Yehuda. That's the inspiration of Yehuda. The second level, which is similar to the first but slightly different, is the Nesiva Shalom. The Nesiva Shalom says that the Midah of Malchus is Yehuda, while the Midah of Yesod, or the foundation of that clear connection to God, is Yosef. The Yesod is that feeling of tshuka, that feeling of desire and passion to God. Most of us are Yehuda, which means that we don't always feel that closeness, we don't always feel that compassion. And the key that we have to recognize is that we need to serve God at all times, even when we don't feel that closeness. Even when we don't feel that intense relationship, we have to move forward in the recognition and knowledge that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there and that He is helping us in all that we do. And that's why he says, this is why Yehuda is again the plower. when reaping, Yosef clearly knows it comes from God. But when you're planting and you don't see God right now, he says so beautifully, when a Jew is moving forward in the time of the darkness, they know ro'es siman bracha and doesn't feel blessing from God. Elo ma'amin shebasofo shel davar yazor lo Hashem yitbarach. In the end, Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to help him. That's the aspect of Yehuda. That's the aspect of plowing forward, literally, recognizing that in the end, God is going to help him be fruitful in relationship with him. When you feel distant from God, you still have to move forward. Even if intellectually you have a lot of problems, you need to move forward, you need to keep on plowing, and ultimately it will bear fruit. And that's how the Nesiv HaShalom explains this pasuk, Vayigash Elav Yehuda, also on a deeper level, by saying that when a Jew feels in the Shas Hester, in a time of darkness, ubecholim yanei avodat Hashem eino ro'eh hatzlacha, and they do not feel any success, v'kama shemekabel otzmo v'shofech damo b'yigiyato b'b'chinat shifchu damam kamayim, harei rachok ma'atachlit, and no matter how difficult they work, they still feel distant from God. Therefore, the person's only hope is to step forward and to daven to God. Vayigash eilav dehu lashon nistar. That you turn to God, and God is here, is the distance, is the third person. This is a reference to God, when you feel distant from God. You nevertheless, you take a step forward to God, and so beautifully you say to him, Be Adoni, which on a deeper level does not only mean please my master, but be Adoni, within me is Adnos, within me is godliness. And therefore, please allow me to speak in your ears, God, that I'm able to pour out my soul to you and to recognize that although I feel distant, I want to come close. Two aspects for our lives. Yehuda representing at all times, recognizing everything comes from God. And the second, even when we feel distant from God, we nevertheless have to move forward and say we recognize that God is going to help us. That we might not be at a level of Yosef, of feeling at all times connected, at all times in love, that all our desires is for God. We might be like a Yehuda. We might slip up. We might fall. We might fail. We might sin. We nevertheless, Yehuda is the model of being able to pick yourself up. Even in times of darkness, even in times of sin, we're able to pick ourselves up, times of planting, not seeing the fruit of our labors and saying we know that God is going to help us. We might mess up. We might follow in the path of Yehuda, of falling and rising and falling and rising. Yehuda is a model for us that even when we fall, we're able to rise. Even when we feel distant from God, we're able to hold on to this closeness. But I think on the final point, there's a much deeper idea that's found here. In reality, which approach should we have in our service of God, Yehuda or Yosef? The answer is clearly both. You need to have a Malchus Yehuda, you need to have a Malchus of Yosef. You need to have this intellectual understanding of God, the logic of the mind, and you need to have the emotional, the logic of the heart. Every person needs to synthesize both of these aspects. And that brings us back to the original Medrash. The original Medrash of Yehuda coming forward to Yosef, that's the model of the end of the Haftarah of Yechezkel. In the future, they will be Vayula Achadim Biyadecha, there will be one in his hand. That the aspect of Yehuda and Yosef have to be integrated as one. And that's, I think, the deeper understanding as we are making brings of these aspects of the imagery in Amos, of the plower, of the reaper, of the wine, the sower of the seeds. This model that Chazal bring is really the model of what Yosef and Yehuda ultimately will be about. And he says so beautifully in the end of his essay in Mamakim. He says we're dealing with four different aspects of the planting process. We're dealing with the plowing, with the reaping, with the processing of the grapes, and the sowing of the grape seeds. And he says if you look at it very closely, you can divide these four into two categories. Two, plowing and the sowing, the planting and the sowing of the seeds represent the bekoach, represent the potential. The taking in, the reaping, and the stepping on the grapes represent the bepoel, represent the actuality. But if you look at the way Chazal ascribe the different qualities to the different individuals, we find something fascinating. On the one hand, Yehuda, as we've just noted a number of times, is the person who is involved primarily in the plowing, and Yosef in the reaping. But then Chazal go on to say, the Derech Anavim, the one who treads upon the grapes, is Yehuda, and the one who brings the seeds is Yosef. And here we find that they're both given some aspect of the potential as well as some aspect of the actual. By giving opposite jobs to Yehuda and Yosef, Yehuda, who's involved on the one hand in plowing, but yet's involved on treading on grapes, Yosef, who on the one hand is the reaper, but on the other hand is the one who is going to be involved in bringing the seeds and planting the seeds for the grapes, we see here a total integration between the Bekoach and the Bepoel, in between the actual and the potential. And this is the deeper aspect of Vayigash, the aspect of coming close. That Yehuda and Yosef in the future are going to be so close one with each other, there's going to be in Yichud Gamor, there's going to be a total oneness in the future, that both of these aspects are going to be found in both of them in order to bring about a Gilui Kvod Avara Yisparach Babria, a glorification of God's name in this world. And that's really Vayigash Elav Yehuda. When Yehuda comes close to Yosef, these are the Malachim, these are the kings. The kings represent the Bekoach and the Bepoel, the actual, the potential, the heart and the mind. Yehuda coming close to Yosef is not just a Yehuda coming close to Yosef, it's foretelling what the future ultimate is going to bring, where the Yehuda and the Yosef are going to be one. The plower, the reaper, the treader on grapes, the bringer of the seeds, are all going to be intermingled one with the other. And that's the vision that we look forward to in the future, where you're not going to have really these distinctions of role, of logic of the heart and logic of the mind as being two separate ones, but rather being two aspects of the same person and two aspects of the ultimate service of God, of the ability to take an emotional connection to God, the children of Rachel, with the more outspoken action world of Leah, and being able to assimilate them together in a synthesized product of the service of God.